This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, March 18th, 2014. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of this region's history and culture.
Ahead on Ozarks, how education and employment are more connected than ever before in Arkansas. Christina Thomas has a report from yesterday's Career and Technical Education Summit in Northwest Arkansas.
Plus, our technical ambassador, Tyrell Dennison, breaks down some of the new technology that was on display at South by Southwest.
First, Governor Mike Beebe yesterday issued a line item veto on a budget bill provision that would exempt sales tax collections on sand used in oil and natural gas drilling. In a letter to lawmakers, the governor said the legislature made a substantive change to state law without following the proper constitutional steps during a fiscal session. Matt DeCampbell is the governor's spokesman.
When the voters of Arkansas created the fiscal sessions in the Constitution, they specifically had a clause in there saying that to consider something like this, which is tax policy and not just appropriating money for the budget, you needed a two-thirds majority of both houses to approve it before it went. It would be considered. Doing it through special language, we don't think complies with the constitutional requirement.
Some Republican legislators are calling for a vote to override the veto, which could be possible tomorrow during the formal adjournment of the fiscal session. Some lawmakers have said the tax exemption was an attempt to clarify state law in accordance with a Pulaski County Circuit Judge's ruling that classified sand as drilling equipment, meaning taxes could not be collected on the sand.
The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics released new unemployment numbers yesterday, and figures released by the Arkansas Department of Workforce Services show an increase in the number of workers who found a job. The unemployment rate dropped a tenth of 1 point to 7.3% in January. Dr. Michael Packow with the UALR Institute for Economic Advancement says the numbers show overall positive trends in the state's economy.
What we're seeing is that some weakness that had seemed to pervade labor markets through much of 2012 and 2013 seems to have really turned around. Since about August of last year, we're seeing the trends all move in a positive direction. So I think that's very encouraging.
Packow notes the service sector seems to be doing the most hiring. He also says sectors like construction are relatively stable, even though a downturn in construction jobs is typical through the winter months.
Academy Award-winning actor Jeff Bridges ate breakfast with students at Stevens Elementary School in Little Rock yesterday to advocate for school breakfast programs. The star of The Big Lebowski and True Grit said small changes, such as moving breakfast from before to after the bell, help ensure children will be at school when the meals are served.
The government has made, you know, over $1 billion available to states, but it's also so important for governors to champion this breakfast after the bell, so they can take advantage of that, of those funds. If not, you know, they're losing money that could go to, you know, bettering their condition of the kids in their state.
Bridges was speaking as part of the No Kid Hungry campaign, which seeks to coordinate private, nonprofit, and governmental programs designed to help feed low-income children. Arkansas ranks second in the nation in food insecurity, but the state is also one of the top 10 states in increasing breakfast participation for school children.
Siloam Springs aldermen this evening will consider an ordinance that will officially allow restaurants in the city to sell alcohol for on-premises consumption. J.C. Williams, Siloam Springs city attorney, says the ordinance is comparable to other ordinances passed elsewhere in recent months.
This ordinance would allow the businesses that currently have private club permits to basically engage in what's known as liquor by the drink, in other words, retail sale for on-premises consumption. It's already been approved in several other cities. We based our ordinance on legislation that had been effectively enacted in Washington County.
City aldermen originally enacted the ordinance last February, and state legislators last April passed a law specifically tailored to allow Benton County cities to pass liquor by the drink ordinances. However, Williams says there was one slight problem.
Unfortunately, we enacted ours in anticipation of the state providing the authorization to do that. The state has taken the position that our ordinance is not effective because it was enacted too soon. So they've instructed us to just readopt it it's exactly the same. It's not changing a word. It's just going to have a new enactment date, and that will allow the local businesses to go ahead and get their permits through the Alcoholic Beverage Control Commission.
With such a permit, restaurants can buy alcohol at wholesale prices, whereas businesses with private club licenses are required to make purchases at retail costs.
Later this week, Fayetteville residents will have a chance to see proposed improvements to one of the city's busier traffic corridors. The Arkansas Highway and Transportation Department will hold a public input session regarding plans for Weddington Drive and the Interstate 540 interchange on Weddington Drive. The project will extend from west of Salem Road to east of Futrell Drive. The public input session will be held from 4 until 7 o'clock Thursday evening at the Asbell Elementary School cafeteria on Sang Avenue in Fayetteville.
Governor Mike Beebe yesterday appointed his longtime chief of staff to the University of Arkansas Board of Trustees. Morrill Harriman, a former state senator from Van Buren, has served as Governor Beebe's chief of staff since 2007. Harriman replaces Sam Hilburn of North Little Rock on the U of A board, and the term expires in 2024.
Mostly clear tonight, lows in the mid-30s in northwest Arkansas, upper 30s tonight. For lows in the Arkansas River Valley tomorrow, sunny, highs from 58 to 62. Tomorrow night, clear, lows from 29 to 35. This is Ozarks at Large. American public colleges and universities seek to contain wage and benefit costs by hiring contingent faculty, those without permanent status. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, contingent faculty on many campuses face an ivory ceiling.
Mary Smith teaches part-time at Northwest Arkansas Community College in Bentonville.
All right, this is my W-2 form for the year 2013. And it shows me making a grand total of $16,800 before taxes and other withdrawals. And that's making the maximum amount that I can make in a year.
Smith, not her real name because she wants to keep her adjunct job, says she's paid per credit hour, 3 hours per week per semester, times three because she teaches three different classes. But Smith says, unlike full-time faculty, she's not paid for extraneous work.
There's grading, there's lesson planning, fine-tuning. There's always the students who have questions that you have to meet with them it varies a lot.
And each semester is a new teaching contract.
Because we're treated as though we are new employees when we start the new semester. So we have to wait two pay periods before we get our first paycheck. But yet the state of Arkansas does not consider us to be unemployed during that period of time that we are not under contract, so we can't get unemployment. And summers obviously are the worst. We have, months where we don't have any income.
Finding part-time work to accommodate her mutable teaching schedule is tricky, Smith says. Plus, her part-time status provides no health benefits. Smith wants to work full-time at the college.
If I do this adjunct thing for, 2 to 3 years and show how good I am, that I can be then moved up into full-time status. That is not the case. Full-time openings come up rarely.
Two generations ago, permanent full-time professors predominated on college campuses. Today, according to the Coalition on the Academic Workforce, of 1.8 million teaching at both two- and four-year colleges, 1.3 million, or more than three-quarters, are contingent, comprised of non-tenured full-time professors and teachers, as well as part-time adjunct instructors. Northwest Arkansas Community College reflects that trend. Spokesperson Stephen Hines.
NWIC has about 300 adjunct instructors and 150 full-time instructors.
Hines says there's a clear business case for hiring adjunct faculty.
One of our reasons for employing adjunct faculty members is that it allows us to have people from business and industry working directly with the students. This provides a chance for students to hear from people who are already working in their chosen field. Another reason is that it allows us to keep tuition lower while still providing a quality education. With funding from the state of Arkansas being flat, NWIC is looking for efficiencies while maintaining high quality instruction for our students, and this is one of the ways that we are able to do that.
Scott Clifthorn refers to the steep rise in contingent faculty hires as casualization, the reallocation of full-time employees to casual or part-time positions. He's spokesperson for the advocacy and legal rights group, the American Association of University Professors, with chapters in 41 states, including two in Arkansas. Scott Clifthorn points to two trends.
In general, state funding for higher education has gone way, way down.
Forcing colleges to assemble robust development teams, for example, to raise more money, hiring less faculty.
I think most people would be shocked to learn that the national average that universities are spending on directly on instruction barely hits 30%.
In the UA system, depending upon the campus, a top administrator can earn well over $200,000, full professors half that, and instructors half that. Adjuncts earn half of what instructors earn. University of Arkansas in Fayetteville counts 1,260 instructional faculty. 1,080 are full-time, 180 are part-time. UALR counts 470 full-time instructional faculty and more than 300 part-time. And Scott Clifthorn says many contingent employees, including adjuncts, report living check to check.
In addition to being part-time, temporary, seasonal jobs, there's at most institutions, there's no ladder for progress.
Not the proverbial glass ceiling, but an ivory ceiling made opaque by what some say is a draconian tenure system. Myra Besosa is a full-time contingent faculty at California State University, San Marcos. She also serves on AAUP's National Council as a member at large. She says tenure, historically, has been conveyed only to an academic elite.
Tenure is really a way to provide economic stability, to attract people to the profession, and to guarantee academic freedom, because without permanent employment, you know, you do not really have academic freedom if you can be fired because of speech, for example.
Tenure reform is starting to take root mainly on unionized campuses, fighting against what is often characterized as the Walmartization of the American university system. Contingent faculty at the University of Illinois Chicago struck in mid-February, citing poverty wages, while the school's financial assets, according to a 2013 audit, increased by more than $300 million. But Myra Besosa says change is occurring, for example, among organized University of California lecturers.
They become eligible for permanent employment after 6 years in a department, 6 consecutive years, and they can be part or full-time. In the Cal State University, we're not there yet. I hope that we get there. But what we have are 3-year appointments that are renewable, okay? And they can be part or full-time. There's also the model of the Vancouver Community Colleges, where part-time faculty teaching half or above become regularized after a certain period of time. They become permanent.
Unions, however, have little influence in the South, and Besosa says contingent faculty can petition their peer senates to advocate for better wages and benefits. UA Fayetteville's faculty senate, according to an inside source, has just started discussions about contingency issues and plans to monitor hiring ratios. Rhoda DeBrezzo is Vice Provost for Faculty Development and Enhancement in the Division of Academic Affairs at the University of Arkansas Fayetteville.
One of the things that we're doing at the university that I am very proud of is we have included our adjunct faculty within the Teaching and Faculty Support Center. We are asking that entity to make sure that they pay attention to that. And most of the departments on campus extend voting privileges to all faculty, clinical and adjunct. And that, I think, is a sign that we are trying to be sensitive to what we would call is two distinctions or two classes of faculty. We are trying very hard to avoid that.
DeBrezzo says her administration is well aware that nationwide as much as 70% of faculty are employed off tenure track.
We're committed to not doing that here. We would much rather add tenure track faculty lines, no doubt about it.
Still, according to the numbers, UA research faculty hires have decreased by nearly 60% over the past decade, while administrative staff have increased by nearly a third. But DeBrezzo says that data doesn't tease out administrators like herself who continue to teach, and the need for critical support staff to both tenured and contingent faculty. Plus,
there are no instructional faculty that are either tenure or tenure track that aren't responsible for research. So we may not call them research faculty, but they are still responsible for research.
And compared to the rest of the UA system, contingent faculty are paid more on the Fayetteville campus, according to 2012 data crunched by the Chronicle of Higher Education Adjunct Project. And Vice Provost for Faculty Development and Enhancement, Ro DeBrezzo, says durable contracts are being struck.
I don't think there's anyone on our campus that doesn't believe that as we move forward, we try and move to the top 50, as we work on retention and graduation rates, none of those initiatives are attainable without the faculty.
An AAUP Committee on Contingency report points to the collapsing faculty infrastructure as a failure of a social contract in higher education. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Ahead on Ozarks, there was a time when South by Southwest in Austin, Texas, was all about music. But techies have established a secure foothold.
So, for example, in 2007, South by Southwest Interactive was going on, and a little-known company called Twitter caught fire in the tech sphere there. And everybody all of a sudden started using Twitter at South by Southwest, and they caught this huge bump, and then it blew up, and now there's Twitter. And then the next year, Foursquare did the same thing.
There's still music at South by Southwest, but our tech ambassador, Tyrell Dennison, gets us up to date on the tech debuts at the festival in 2014. That's in about 10 minutes on Ozarks at Large.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, we kick off our live broadcast from NPR West with an interview with California Governor Jerry Brown on his ideas to deal with the state's historic drought.
A lot more conservation and a management of water below the ground and above the ground in a very careful way.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
It begins at 1 o'clock this afternoon on KUAF Public Radio.
According to a new report from Arkansas Children's Hospital, Arkansas has made progress in vaccinating children. That report, titled Natural Wonders, the State of Children's Health in Arkansas, says the state has increased from 57% compliance in 2007 to 72% compliance in 2011. Scott Gordon, ACH Executive Vice President, says this is an example of where they've been able to move the needle by informing parents in a timely manner of the importance of immunizations.
And also to debunk some of the myths that have sprung up around immunization so that people can understand how safe they really are. We're really pleased with that because it does mean that kids are protected against diseases that they have no reason to contract if they are immunized. We are concerned, however, that there is some increasing use of philosophic exemptions by families which don't have a medical basis, but allow in Arkansas for families to exempt the children out from immunization. So we're going to be working to continue to educate and inform people so they can make informed choices.
According to the report, ACH has led the Natural Wonders Partnership Council since its inception in 2007. More than two dozen leaders from various fields meet monthly to share information and prioritize steps that will improve children's health and well-being. This is the fourth edition of the Natural Wonders Report, which Gordon says came from a question that was asked during a 2006 Board of Directors retreat.
One of the board members asked the question, since we do such a good job for the kids who have injury and illness and need to be in the hospital, what are we doing for the kids in Dumas? And Dumas was sort of a placeholder for all the small towns out and about around the state. So the basic question was, what are we doing to help all of the children in the state, not just the ones that are brought to us?
Gordon says they began collecting data by conducting a random survey of 1,000 families spread evenly over the state's four congressional districts, as well as by organizing focus groups and key informant groups. Gordon says they revisited that same methodology in 2012 and 2013, and they replicated it with all new people in order to gather additional information. because they use the same method for gathering data. Gordon says they have continuity from their first data set until 2013, which means they have the beginnings of some trending information. The report looks at a variety of areas such as access to care, oral health, and unintentional injuries. The report looks at where the state has made improvements in one category and points to areas where continued intervention is needed. In the category of unintentional injury, for example, the report notes that while Arkansas infants die at almost double the national rate from sudden infant death syndrome, the state's rate of unintentional child death has dropped by 40% in the last decade. Gordon says while the state has made improvements, that number is still high compared to the rest of the country because other states are also making improvements. A comprehensive education program to help people understand there are certain things they can do to help promote the health of children in the first year of life has been one of the strategies used to address this issue.
We've done a lot of work around the idea of sleeping children on their back and not on their stomachs. We've worked to make sure that cribs are safe and don't have ways for children to get their heads caught between the slats in the cribs, or not to get covered up with blankets and smother. And we've also promoted the idea that it's not safe to put an infant in bed with adults. These things alone make a huge difference in terms of reducing the number of sudden infant death syndrome children.
Gordon says the report highlights a number of areas where they are proud of their accomplishments, such as oral health. He says Arkansas is one of only a few states that doesn't have a dental school. He says the state faces a challenge in terms of attracting enough dentists and making sure there are plenty of dentists that are willing to see children. While working to improve oral health, Gordon says they have been promoting the idea of pediatric dentistry in areas of the state that haven't had that in the past. He also says the state, through the Medicaid system, has improved the reimbursement for dentists treating kids.
We're most proud, though, of our dental sealant program that the hospital has conducted for the last 5 years. We've been able to take kids ages 6 to 9 and put sealants on their permanent teeth when they come in, and as a result, protect those teeth so they don't get cavities. When we started in 5 years ago, Arkansas had 15% of the children in the state between ages 6 and 9 that had their teeth sealed. Today, that number is 27%. And the national Healthy People 2020 goal for 2020 for the nation for this age range is only 28%. So we're really moving that needle rapidly and in a very positive direction.
ACH Executive Vice President Scott Gordon says he is also proud of the work the Injury Prevention Center, members in the Natural Wonders Coalition, and others have done to create a trauma system in the state, as well as implement primary seatbelt laws.
On an average, it takes 5 minutes and 50 seconds for a child who is identified to the trauma system to be referred to and accepted by a trauma center for care, and putting that trauma physician in touch with whoever the caregiver is at the moment. So we make that connection within 5 minutes and 50 seconds on the average now today, which for a rural state like Arkansas is phenomenal. The other thing is we've seen a major drop in the number of teen and child deaths in automobiles after we implemented the primary seatbelt law and implemented the graduated driver's license. And so we're excited because this means between 30 and 40 children each year are not killed. So those are funerals we don't have to have. These are kids whose lives are able to continue and grow. And it's just an exciting thing for our state.
When addressing issues like child health care, Gordon says one of the most important things is for the public to be informed.
The way that we can inform is both through the publishing of this report in both a hard copy and also in the electronic form at the Arkansas Children's Hospital website, so people can have ready access to accurate information and also learn about programs that are existent in the state that are addressing some of the issues that are facing children and families. It also gives communities a chance to look at what they might do in addressing the needs that they identify within their local communities, so that we have a situation in which the state at all levels is mobilizing energy and resources to improve the health status of children.
You can read the full 2014 Natural Wonders Report by visiting archildrens.org/news and clicking on the Publications and Newsletters tab. This is Ozarks at Large.
And in about 12 minutes on Ozarks, the apps that made their debut at South by Southwest this month, Tyrell Dennison, our tech ambassador, offers a guide to what has become a major launching pad for new tech services.
A collection of music recorded by local musicians is providing $9,000 to help area school districts assist students living without permanent shelter. The CD Sounds Made in the Mountains, Volume 2, was funded by First Security Bank late last year. According to the 2013 Northwest Arkansas Point in Time Homeless Census, more than 1,100 area children in kindergarten through 12th grade are homeless. Five districts, Bentonville, Fayetteville, Rogers, Springdale, and Gentry, identified more than 100 homeless students in their district. The money raised by the sales of the CD was split among local school district services for homeless students.
A pair of area food banks are receiving assistance from novel sources. The River Valley Regional Food Bank in Fort Smith is teaming up with General Mills to allow people to donate food by simply sending a text message. The system allows people to text the word hunger to 80153, and General Mills will respond with a request for the donor zip code. Each completed text will mean a $1.33 donation to the food bank, and the food bank says each donation is worth 12 meals. The texts have to take place by March 25th. The text number again, 80153.
The Northwest Arkansas Food Bank's partner for an April food drive is professional fisherman Rich Dalby. When on tour for FLW Pro tournaments, he often sponsors food drives for local food banks. He's asking visitors to the April 12th FLW Expo at the John Q. Hammond Center in Rogers to bring cans of food with them to be donated to the Northwest Arkansas Food Bank. You can learn more at hookedonhelping.com.
The status of women in the 19th century will be the subject of a presentation Sunday afternoon at the Clayton House in Fort Smith. Cheryl Flanagan, a Fort Smith resident and women's rights history aficionado, will present an examination of the restriction on women and girls in the 1800s. The discussion is at 2 Sunday afternoon. Seating is limited, and a donation of $5 is suggested. You can learn more by calling the Clayton House at 783-3000.
The Ozark Poets and Writers Collective will host Rodney Wilhite at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville a week from tonight. He will read his poetry that is influenced by his native eastern Oklahoma. The program begins at 7 and includes an open mic session for poems. You can learn more at ozarkwriters.wordpress.com.
And if you're interested in becoming a better writer, the Village Writing School in Eureka Springs is offering a workshop devoted to self-editing Saturday from 9 until 4. The workshop costs $45 and promises to cover the 15 steps of first draft to finished manuscript. For more information about the workshop on Saturday or about the nonprofit Village Writing School, you can go to villagewritingschool.com. You can also call 292-3665.
The Walmart Visitor Center and the parking lot of the former Fayetteville City Hospital will become art galleries later this week. The Walmart Visitor Center in Bentonville hosts the Bentonville Fine Art Show Saturday and Sunday. Sponsored by Black Art America and the Silver Parker Group, the exhibit will feature works from some of the world's preeminent African-American artists. The exhibit is open to the public Saturday from 11 a.m. until 7 p.m. and Sunday from noon until 5.
Meanwhile, the Arkansas Art Center's Artmobile will be parked in the parking lot adjacent to the recently closed City Hospital in Fayetteville for 5 days beginning Saturday morning. The Artmobile is one of the country's few rolling art museums and includes works selected from the Arkansas Art Center's permanent art collection in Little Rock. The Artmobile will be open to the general public from 10 until 5 Saturday through Wednesday, except Sunday when the hours are 1 to 5. The stop in Fayetteville is sponsored by the Star Foundation and the Fayetteville Public Library.
Last week, the Northwest Arkansas Council released its 2013 Regional Employer Survey, in which more than 500 businesses in the area were asked many questions about their employees, their communities, and what they need. There were many takeaways from the report, including employers' needs for workers with certifications like a 2-year associate's degree or a CDL driving certification. Yesterday, members of industry, government, and education, including Arkansas Economic Development Commission Director Grant Tenniel, met in an event focused on advancing career and technical education in Northwest Arkansas. Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas attended that event and has this report.
Over 150 participants came together in the first annual Northwest Arkansas Regional Partnership Council event, with a variety of stakeholders represented from teachers and superintendents, post-secondary institutions, and business and industry, all at the facilitating organization, the Northwest Arkansas Education Services Cooperative. The NWAESC is a state-funded organization that offers support to school districts and their teachers in Washington, Madison, and Benton counties. Cheryl Pickering is their career and technology education coordinator. She says bringing together education and industry is what today's ever-expanding workforce needs.
Education is economic development. So as Northwest Arkansas continues to grow, our students need to meet the demand of the marketplace, and that's what today is all about.
Pickering says that the teachers in the career and tech education programs are thrilled that business leaders from companies such as J.B. Hunt, Walmart, and Tyson have taken time out of their busy schedules to visit with them. Getting outside of the four walls of a classroom is a rare opportunity, and receiving feedback from the real business world is important to the skills they are teaching their students so that they can be proficient in the necessary skills when they are finished with their respective programs. She says that middle-skilled jobs, rather than skilled or unskilled, are becoming in high demand.
Many of the job openings that are hot today in Northwest Arkansas might require an associate's degree, a two-year degree, or a certificate program. Might take 6 months, 9 months, or a year to get that certificate program, and they can start working making $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year with just that certificate program. They don't have to spend 4 years and hundreds of thousands of dollars to get that four-year degree. So there's lots of opportunities in Northwest Arkansas with some post-secondary education, not necessarily a complete four-year degree.
The breakout sessions at yesterday's event were conducted in part by industry leaders such as Tyson and J.B. Hunt. They mimic the course offerings in Arkansas's public schools, agriculture, which Pickering says is the number one employer in the state of Arkansas, healthcare, business and marketing, supply chain logistics, hospitality and culinary arts, education, and engineering. Arkansas Department of Career Education has 350 courses offered to students in grades 7 through 12. This agency is separate from the Arkansas Department of Education. Ray Henson is the Associate Director for Workforce Training. He says keeping up with a change in tradition in both education and the workforce environment is a challenge.
What we're trying to do right now is upgrade our career tech ed programs with the new Common Core curriculum and career readiness practices, and to meet the needs of our employers in the state and the needs of our students so that they can find gainful employment in the shortest amount of time possible.
It is that changing ideal that an employee doesn't have to have a college degree to necessarily succeed that Henson says has been difficult to overcome in the world of education. It leaves many employers at a loss when it comes to finding prepared employees, and many college graduates struggling to find employment.
Our students have been preparing for college programs, but our employers are looking for a different skill set with some of the work-based learning skills. We need to get some of our students back into the workforce for those extended learning opportunities that have been lacking for the last few years.
Steve Sparks is the division director for the existing business resource team for the Arkansas Economic Development Commission as a representative of the state's employers. He came to this education partnership meeting to help facilitate proper communication between education and business. Sparks says both have demands and functions, but each go about them differently.
The industry statewide needs a competent workforce. That definition is changing. There is no definition at this point. And as a result of that, when they scream, "We don't have workforce," they say, "We don't have competent workforce." And yet they have a very difficult time defining what they mean. Educators hear that and go about their daily functions. They've got too many other directions to go. As a result of that, they end up focusing on what the education system wants them to do and not necessarily what our economic environment needs.
He says this comes to the surface when the two sides sit down together like they did yesterday. Both walk away with a different understanding of what needs to be done and he's there to get the dialogue going.
And our job with economic development is to work with the existing businesses around the state and make sure we connect dots. We make sure that when industry needs something, we bring in the right players and leverage what resources the state has to offer to make sure they get what they need. Unless they can stay productive and profitable, they're either shut down or they'll move to another location where they can. And workforce seems to be the common denominator between that. If they can find the right workforce, they can be productive. We have great people in Arkansas. We have great resources in Arkansas. What we've got to do is connect the two.
For Sparks, some of the challenges are diversity and skill level, a lack of basic problem-solving skills, and kids who enter the workforce with a sense of entitlement. CTE programs are part of the answer. He says something gets accomplished. There's an outcome, like a certificate, a direct application, as opposed to some classrooms, when students can memorize information to pass a test, but then aren't able to apply it. According to the Arkansas Department of Career Education's 2013 report, over 164,000 students in Arkansas in grades 7 through 12 were enrolled in a CTE program. That's 77% of students at any one time. And some of those students were present. High schoolers enrolled in the Springdale District Television News program were filming the leadership conference, conducting interviews with participants, which they will then turn into training videos to be distributed to CTE educators around the state. Lake Luckett is a 2013 graduate of that very program and has since been hired by the district to work part-time. He listened to the morning's panelists and agreed with some of the benefits of workforce training.
All of the men and women on the board were talking about technology and how no matter what job you're in at their program, you have to be able to use a computer and use technology. And I can attest to that. Every day I walk in, I turn on 17 different computers. I've got 8 processes going all at once that I just kind of have to keep up with. And to be able to do that, I have to have a nice grasp on technology. And I think that is what they were really trying to drive home here today.
Lake is just midway through his first semester in the University of Arkansas's broadcast journalism program. But he can already see that his high school experiences and on-the-job training have given him an advantage.
UATV actually walked into my media and society class, and they asked for volunteers to come. And they started just naming off a bunch of different positions, and I was like, I could do all of those by myself. 5 minutes easy.
Career and technology education is not just limited to secondary education. Representatives from Arkansas Tech University Ozark were also present. As an institution with a mission of career education, Chancellor Bruce Sykes says the topics covered at yesterday's event are very near and dear to their hearts. They have training programs that support these aspects and are interested in building partnerships with industry and business.
It's our obligation to connect industry with education, and it's also where we sit as far as in the educational continuum. It's our obligation to reach down into the secondary level, but to also reach up and connect to the industry.
ATU Ozark prides themselves on linking the things they do to job opportunities and on building partnerships, like at this Northwest Arkansas Regional CTE Partnership Council meeting. The hope is that these will happen at least annually, but if the feedback is good, they could be seen as often as quarterly. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
It is Tuesday, March 18th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
It's History and Literature Tuesday.
Okay.
Did you know?
I did not.
But
okay.
I'm ready to observe this.
I know now.
Like this.
Okay. We're starting to have a few themed things going on here because there's just so much to tell everybody about. Renewing the World, New Research at the Spiro Ceremonial Center. George Sabo III is going to speak. He's director of the Arkansas Archaeological Survey. And that happens at 7 o'clock today in the Reynolds Room at the Smith Pendergraph Campus Center at UAFS. Mm-hmm. It's my favorite prize.
Absolutely free.
On Wednesday, that's tomorrow, for those of you who are running late like I am, Sandwiched In at the Shiloh Museum in Springdale starts at noon. And this week's guest is Meredith Sisko, who's host of These Ozark Hills and a member of Blackberry Winter Band. Mm-hmm. And she's going to talk about life in the Ozarks. Not only is it free.
You get like cookies or something,
yeah, they
right?
have yeah. cookies.
Nice.
That's better than free.
And Christopher Paul Curtis, the author of The Watsons Go to Birmingham, 1963, and The Mighty Miss Malone.
And that first book won the Newbery Prize, did it not?
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
And he is going to be at the Fayetteville Public Library at 1 o'clock on Thursday, and you can go and hear him absolutely free.
That's fantastic.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is our tech ambassador, Tyrell Dennison, who is the Chief Technology Officer for Grand Slam Performance Associates. Ty, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
This is the time of the year when many people flock to Austin, Texas for the mega festival that's called South by Southwest. Started as a music festival, there are different components, including a very viable technological component.
Yeah, it's South by Southwest is an entity into itself. This is the time of year when the HR departments at technology companies all over the world get all kinds of crazy submissions by people like myself who are trying to justify a trip to South by Southwest as a business development trip. There is some great business development opportunities, but everybody knows it's just one big crazy fun party as well. So
this part that's called South by Southwest Interactive, that's the one that is really attracts the technology aficionados, right?
That's right. Yeah, South by Southwest Interactive is where people come to kind of demo things, show off what they're working on, a lot of stuff that happens in the social side of things. So, for example, in 2007, South by Southwest Interactive was going on, and a little known company called Twitter caught fire in the tech sphere there, and everybody all of a sudden started using Twitter at South by Southwest, and they caught this huge bump, and then it blew up, and now there's Twitter. And then the next year, Foursquare did the same thing. They showed up and introduced the world to check-in-based apps, and there's a real big ability for apps to go very viral very quickly at South by Southwest, and a lot of companies kind of thrive on that. There's one this year that everyone's looking into called Secret, and that was kind of the one that stood out to the front. That doesn't mean they're going to be successful. It doesn't mean their success at South by Southwest will translate afterwards.
But it does have the buzz at South by Southwest.
Absolutely. And what Secret does is allows you to post. It's kind of like a completely anonymous Twitter.
Okay.
So that you can post whatever you want in small increments. And they have their own page. If you go to, I believe it's secret.com/SXSW, if you just search Secret SXSW, mm-hmm. you'll end up at it. And it was their own feed of secret posts that were produced at South by Southwest. And so you could watch people anonymously comment on South by Southwest through that channel.
I have two thoughts. Yes. A, I thought nothing was anonymous when it went into the ether.
They say anonymous-ish.
Okay.
They call it anonymous-ish, actually.
Anonymous, really?
Yeah.
Okay. And B, I've seen what some people put on Twitter when they know they're being identified. Do we need something where someone can post things and it not be traced to them?
Yeah, I looked at it. It's, to keep with the ish, it's NSFW-ish.
Okay.
There wasn't anything just vulgar.
Okay.
But just people say some things that you're just like, oh, I can see why you said that when you don't think anyone knows who you are and not with your name attached to it.
What can you explain to me in terms I can understand what technologically allows it to be anonymous as opposed to Twitter?
They just don't post the name information of the content creator.
Okay.
In the display of the content.
Okay.
So they'll need basic information from you when they create your account, so that in that sense there's information at the back of your account.
Right.
However,
they never
display that information to the public.
Gotcha.
That's where the ish comes in.
Okay. Secret.
Secrets. But there are all kinds of other companies too that kind of have their debut.
So much like bands in the early days of South by Southwest, labels would send bands to hopefully break them.
Yep.
startups now go to Southwest and hope to get broken and emerge as a full-fledged.
Precisely. And so if you're a service, you go to South by Southwest. If you're a tech, like if you are a hardware company, you would go to CES.
Over in Las Vegas.
In Vegas.
Right.
So CES is for hardware. South by Southwest is for services and startups in that arena. So there were always quite a few of them.
So where one needs really investment, another needs excitement.
Correct.
Okay.
Need buzz, needs interaction,
right.
Need clients. And so you get this whole crop of people who are ready to be known and interacted with to the world. And so they want that user base. To hit on some of those, VentureBeat did a really good job, VentureBeat.com, of putting together some startups that stuck out to them that had some real value. So just kind of looking at what they were able to provide, there's an interesting service called CrateJoy. So and what they allow is for a monthly subscription service.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone knows the Dollar Shave Club.
Yes.
Or
yes.
Things like that. If you have an idea and you're just dying to get it out there, CrateJoy is a startup that will allow you to do that. You've got a product that you want to be able to provide at a monthly rate, or you've got this fun idea. Like you could put these things together into this fun package and you think people will pay for that on a recurring basis. You can use CrateJoy to manage that whole process for you, so you don't have to come up with the technology of how to do that. All you have to do is put your product together, put a sticker on it, and get people to buy it.
You mentioned the Dollar Shave Club. People buy razors and shaving apparatus through them, through the mail, never buying them at a brick and mortar again.
Exactly.
It's a subscription service.
Precisely. And you pay a specific amount a month and they just send you what your plan has in it. Another really interesting one is Local Plant Source, and they do exactly what their name is. they show you where to get local plants in your area. So specific plants that you want to get. They show you all the places that have those plants.
So if I want elephant ears for my front yard, I would go to this, type in elephant ears,
and they will show you
within a mile radius of where I'm willing to drive.
They will show you where to get elephant ears locally.
Huh.
Right. So that's super practical, but it's also something that a lot of people will use. There's a lot for landscapers when one of their providers runs out. You know, a lot of times they're pretty well connected, but sometimes they're in a pinch. They don't know where to go. They can go to the local plant source.
I see that ABC Nursery still has some of this.
Right, so I go to there. Precisely. Gotcha. Another cool thing that's going on, everybody's got loyalty cards these days. Everyone, you know, you come and you get rewards. Or you come
if
and
I
get
bought
that.
10 sandwiches, the 11th is free.
Precisely.
That's okay.
Yes, but then you've got to carry a card or a key fob or a little tag or all these really cumbersome things because everybody's got different ones. There's a company called Mahana that's working on a technology that uses Apple's iBeacon,
mm-hmm.
which basically is a RFID reading system, and it tracks you when you come in, and based on your phone says, oh, Jim's here. Jim's got these many reward points. Jim does this. Jim, and it tracks your purchases. It tracks your interactions while you're in that store.
So never again will I be halfway away from that store going, oh, I forgot to get my card out and get it stamped.
Precisely.
It'll
or you won't be at the register saying, and they go, do you have a rewards card? I do, but I don't have it with me. Can I get your phone number?
Well, it might
sure,
be my cell. It might be my wife's
right,
cell.
Precisely.
Yes.
And so that hassle is gone with Mahana as long as you as long as you're comfortable with them just
sure.
grabbing that information while you're in there.
Sure.
So
that one makes sense to me.
Yeah, there's
I like that.
Everything starts a little different when it first comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what eventually makes it so unique and gives it traction. So Weeva is another company, and what they're doing is providing the ability for you to create an online place. A story of your family. So
mm-hmm.
uploading photos, uploading stories, uploading all these things online. And then after you've kind of created the story of your family, you then have the ability to go in and create books that represent all or part of it.
Okay.
So say you've got somebody in your family who's a big historian. They've spent hours, days, weeks on Ancestry.com.
Right.
And they've tracked all of this stuff down. Every family, I think, has got at least one
yes.
of those people.
Yes.
That person, you just send them, I believe, to Weeva.com, if not just Google Weeva, Weeva, and say, go put all that information online so I can go grab it later, or we can or we can print out a book for grandpa or grandma, gotcha. And they can have a visual.
A physical book that you can create about your family's history.
Precisely.
Oh, nice. There's a cost to join
Weaver? Yeah. To get your information up, not that I'm aware of, but the books range anywhere from $30 to $200.
Okay. Not bad.
So most of the time with services like that, there's not too much of a fee up front because they know you're going to want to turn around and get a book, and that's where they get their money. So they gladly let you put your content in their system, knowing that when you want to get it out in a different way, that's when you'll pay.
Okay.
And a lot of these companies are in early stages, so you might see them do a pivot where first they don't charge and they do, or first they charge and then they don't.
Sure.
So this information I've grabbed is real basic overviews. So please deep dive in with anything you're interested in, and you can get all that information for sure.
Tyrell Dennison is our tech ambassador. He's also the chief technology officer for Grand Slam Performance Associates. Thanks, Ty.
You bet.
On the next Fresh Air, a story of cannibalism and colonialism. Journalist Carl Hoffman investigates the disappearance of 23-year-old Michael Rockefeller from off the coast of New Guinea over 50 years ago while on an expedition to collect primitive art. Hoffman's new book is called Savage Harvest. Also, an interview with saxophonist and composer Marty Ehrlich. Join us.
Fresh Air will begin this evening at 6 on 91.3 FM.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Healing Springs. Can fill out a bracket?
Yes. I need to put a reminder on my phone. I totally forgot. I need to do that before Thursday.
Yeah, so you're in one of those sane ones that doesn't make you pick the four games that are tonight and tomorrow night.
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure not. It's like through CBSSports.com. Right. A group of us do it every year. It's free. We're not super serious about it, though. We have a two-time champion who's kind of serious about winning, I guess, just because they've won twice.
The last two?
Mm-hmm. I mean, we've only done it twice. So.
Right. Oh, the undisputed champion.
Sure.
And will you fill one out for the NIT or the College Insider or the CBI?
Probably not, as I didn't even remember that I had agreed to do one for the NCAA Men's Division I.
All right. Can you give us some insight? Who do you think is going to win it all?
I don't know.
Okay.
I need to look at it again. I was listening kind of on Sunday to the selection show that they do, and everybody has their own opinions. And to me, that just makes it worse. The whole thing with this is it doesn't really do you any good to watch like all throughout the season, because in college basketball, really at any given point, anybody that's in the tournament could win or could upset this person.
Right.
It's not like professional sports where things can get to a point where this team is so stacked because of the way they've managed their money and things like that.
Well, and plus in the playoffs, in the professional, most professional sports, you've got a best of seven.
Right.
And the better team generally wins.
Exactly.
Over a series.
You have a series and you don't have that in this. And I mean, the one thing I would say to pay attention to is if somebody's really good player got hurt, because that messed me up a couple of years ago. I picked somebody to go fairly far and realized after the fact that one of their good players had like sprained their ankle in the last game or something. I'm like, really? So.
All right. Well, best of luck.
Thank you.
We're going to end this show with a song by Nora Jane Struthers and the Party Line. It's the title track from their CD Carnival. The band will be at Smoke and Barrel in Fayetteville Thursday night. You can learn more about the band at norajanestruthers.com. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Antoinette and Christina have a brand new show tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
Carnival, let me ride the ride. Buy me a red balloon and some sweet potato fries. I don't care how long we stay, as long as we can see everything there is to see. I want to see the bearded lady in a yellow dress. I want to pray for the man.